When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to DC Standum, your guided tour of the DC multiverse. I'm your host, Mike Cicchini, the editor-in-chief of DennyGeek.com. Each week, I'm bringing you discussions with writers, artists, actors, and experts, covering everything from DC Comics to the movies and TV that make up the DCU. This episode, I've got a special guest. It is Shazam! Fury of the Gods director David F. Sandberg, who joins me to break down all the cool stuff in this really fun sequel. Just a word of warning, folks. This interview is full of spoilers. So if you haven't already seen Shazam! Fury of the Gods, you might not want to hear what he has to say. But before we get to that interview, I'd like to tell you that this episode of DC Standum is presented by DC's Justice League Cosmic Chaos. Outright Games and Warner Brothers are calling DC fans of all ages to unite against chaos in the all-new open-world action-adventure game, DC's Justice League Cosmic Chaos. Designed to be fun for the whole family, you can play as Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman to battle the mischievous Mr. Mixius Pidulick, who has summoned Starro the Conqueror and other supervillains to keep the Justice League busy while he becomes the new self-appointed mayor of Happy Harbor. There's more DC heroes in this one, too. Players can also interact with other Justice League members. Green Lantern, Cyborg, The Flash, and Aquaman make cameos throughout the game. You can enjoy DC's Justice League Cosmic Chaos with friends and family in two-player instant action couch co-op to engage with the exciting and hilarious gameplay. Justice League Cosmic Chaos is available to play now on PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, Xbox XS, and Steam. For more information, head to OutrightGames.com and follow Outright Games on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok for all the latest updates and information on Justice League Cosmic Chaos. And now, here's David F. Sandberg to talk about Shazam! Fury of the Gods. Remember, we're talking spoilers. David, I'd like to go back to the first movie for a second, because that not only set up the return of Dr. Savannah, but it also, you know, teased the arrival and a team up with Mr. Mind. But at what point after Shazam 2 was greenlit did you decide to go with a completely different set of villains entirely? And what made you want to do that?
Well, actually, Mr. Mind and Savannah was a part of this plot originally. It was sort of Mr. Mind who enabled the goddesses to come to Earth. But it was just too much story to tell, you know, because even without that part, it's still over 2 hour long movie, you know, so it just didn't fit, unfortunately. But I'd love to see more of Mr. Mind. But so, yeah, we had to settle for Helen Mirren, Lucy Liu, and Rachel Segler, you know, couldn't get a worm by me,
you know. when you say, at what point, like how far along into the process were you when you folks decided that just like the Mr. Mind stuff was not going to work along with the goddesses?
It was sort of at the treatment or outline stage. So it never made it to like a full script. So it was pretty early along.
I do love that, you still found ways to bring your horror influences to the table in this. Particularly, like, I mean, right in the first scene, we have that with the way Calypso's powers are depicted. Yeah. So as these villains were being conceived, you know, were you looking for ways to kind of make sure that you could like sneak those kind of horror and spooky influences that, you know, were still present in the first film? Like, how important was that to make sure that those were present in this film as well?
I think it's very important just because it adds a real sense of danger. You know, it shows what the threat is, that people can actually die and get hurt. So you get more invested in the story. And then, it's fun to just go wild with monsters and things like that. And like, even in the museum, we actually cut some stuff because it was just, again, kind of too much, because we had like guards getting, or like Hespera using her powers to like impale guards and stuff like that. And it's like, it's a little too much. It's fine to just like turn people into statues and break them and things like that.
I do like that you found other ways to nod to your love of horror in this as well. Like, did I spot a Fulci theater in the background at one point?
Yeah, there's a few like references to old Italian horror directors, like, you know, Dario Argento and Mario Bava and things like that, and even a little Ruggero Deodato reference that's tiny, but it's in there.
Oh wow, I didn't see that one. Where was that?
It's another sort of sign on a building. The building that Shazam gets smacked into when the world rearranges, it's called the Deodato Hotel.
Oh, I love it. I also love that you brought back, you know, probably the deepest cut as far as like comic book Easter eggs in the first film is back in this one with that weird burning violin. And I am a lifelong Shazam fan. And like my dad grew up with the comics in the 40s, right?
Yeah.
And even that one stumped me in the first movie. And I still haven't read the story that's from, but like,
Yeah, it's an old one. That was one where Jeff Johns was like, there's going to be like five people in the world who knows that one. But yeah, no, it's an old story about, yeah, a guy called Nero, who has like a burning fiddle to shoot fire and stuff with.
There's also, you know, there were kind of oblique references to some of the more whimsical elements of Shazam in the first movie. And there's nods to those again here. Like, you know, there was all the tiger imagery in the first one. And this time, like, the kitten that gets rescued is named Tawny, you know. And I understand that, like, that kind of whimsy from those old comics does not necessarily translate to modern audiences. And it's so on the opposite end of the spectrum from, you know, those horror elements that we were talking about as well.
Yeah.
But was there ever any talk of seeing how much you could kind of nod to that or even get away with as far as like, I keep going back to the word whimsical, but like, you know, the kind of innocent, magical elements of this world.
Yeah. And I mean, there was even, you know, we've been talking about ways of getting like Talkie Tawny into the movie. And there was a very early talks of like, oh, maybe we could get him into this one, but you kind of need a little bit of an explanation for it. I don't think you could have something like that just show up like this tiger in a suit who's talking, you know, like you need to have a little bit of an explanation for it, I think, for audiences to accept that. But I think they could if you like, you know, if he comes from a different world through the Room of Doors or something like that. But it wasn't really ready for this movie.
I do want to talk about the climax of the film with all of those monsters. Because it seems like everybody had a lot of fun creating those. And there's some stuff, I mean, that Cyclops looks like he's right out of Ray Harryhausen and like Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. Right.
Yeah.
But there's some others that like, I don't know if it's supposed to be a harpy. There's like this one woman creature that is just terrifying. But can you run through some of those monsters for us?
Yeah. I mean, I love monsters and it's fun to design something that were quite different. You know, like in the first one, we had the seven deadly sins and they have different designs, but they all had to feel like of a piece. And here we could go a little bit more extreme and, you know, have like a manticore, you know, the lion with the scorpion stinger and things like that. And even get to do our own version of a unicorn, like, you know, a more badass version of a unicorn. So I just love designing that stuff and getting to put it on screen.
The terrifying unicorn is a real highlight, and I love the way that he's kind of like spoken about in hushed tones when what do they call him, the king of beasts?
In early screenings I was pleased to see that got such a big laugh when Darla's like, I love unicorns, and the wizard's like, well, the unicorn doesn't love you, you know.
Was it always the plan to give the wizard more to do in this movie, to give him more of an active role?
Yeah, because I mean, Jaimin is so great, and we didn't get to really use him as much in the first one. And I just love how this pairing works so well with like Freddy and the wizard, because he, like, the wizard's sort of the straight man, but he's really funny in this one, Jaimin, I think. It was really fun to see those two together rather than Freddy and Shazam, which we saw in the first movie.
I know everybody, including me, is going to ask you about, you know, the Gal Gadot and Wonder Woman cameo, but I want to talk about the Michael Gray cameo.
That was a fun one.
How did that come about?
It was something like people said after the first movie, hey, you should have gotten Michael Gray in the movie, because, you know, he's around, and, you know, he of course played Billy Batson in the Shazam TV show back in the 70s. The funny thing was that for his scene, he had a different line, but on the day I was like, hey, we should do a version where you say like, oh, you're the best Captain Marvel. So we get to actually call him Captain Marvel. But I figured that, oh, they're not going to let us use that. But then, when I talked to DC, they were like, well, Marvel has mentioned DC characters in their movies, you know, like Superman and things like that. So why not? They can't say anything. I was really happy we got to do that reference and put him in that shirt, you know, so he looks kind of like he did. And yeah.
What was the original line?
I don't remember. We did a couple of different versions, but it was, oh yeah, there was one where he was saying, you know, holy moly, and, you know, the old that thing. And but yeah, no, I'm glad we got to do the Captain Marvel line.
You did get holy moly into the movie elsewhere, so that was nice.
Yeah.
But he was great. You know, it's funny, I had never seen that show until recently when it was released on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And it's so charming, and he's so good in it. So it was nice. It was just nice to see him pop up there.
Yeah. No, that's
fine. But then, of course, you know, the other big cameo is Wonder Woman. And early in the movie, you know, I know that everybody's like, oh, you know, I hope if they're gonna do DC characters in this one, that they're actually gonna show them and it won't be like a headless cameo. And yeah, you played with the headless cameo joke early on.
Yeah. And we can only do that because she actually shows up at the end. Otherwise we would have pissed people off way too much, you know, like, oh, another headless cameo. And even when she does show up, you know, the first shot of her, you know, it's from neck down, but then we quickly, you know, tilt up before, you know, people leave the theater in frustration.
So how did this come about? Because I know there's all kinds of complications with these things, and I'm sure that, you know, you guys were filming during COVID and everything else. So how did this cameo come together, you know, and what was involved in order to get Gal on board for it?
It was in the script right from the start, but I never believed it because of what happened on the first movie where we had to do a headless cameo, you know. I didn't believe it. And because also when we were shooting the majority of that scene, we shot it with a stand-in because they were like, oh, Gal's not going to be able to come here to Atlanta. And I'm like, oh, okay, here we go again, you know. So I started thinking out, okay, what's plan B? What other god can we have to, you know, resurrect Shazam? And it's like, can we have Helen come back? I mean, that's not going to be great, but we're going to need something when, you know, Gal falls through. But then we actually did it. We got to shoot it. I mean, we shot her, had to shoot her separately and sort of put it together, but I think it worked out really well. And she was just a pleasure and a dream to work with.
That ending is really powerful. You know, like the lead up to Billy's sacrifice, and the way it's delivered and like Billy's death. I mean, like when I was watching it the first time, there was a moment where I actually asked myself, I'm like, are they actually doing this? Like,
good. that was the intention.
Yeah,
it's like my hope, like if we really play into this, my hope is going to be that people at least for a second go like, wait, are they really doing this? Because that's the only way it would work, you know? But I have figured that a lot of people would go, well, it's Shazam, so they can't really kill him. But yeah, we wanted to at least have people believe it for a little bit to make it feel real.
If was there ever any consideration that this story would end with like an actual Billy sacrifice and you know, the rest of the characters having to carry on without him?
No, because I mean, you got to have him around, you know, in some ways.
Yeah.
You know, he had to come back somehow.
Yeah.
But it was nice to have that moment and show that he has finally grown up. You know, it took two movies, but now he's that his moment where he becomes a grown up and faces his responsibilities, you know.
Well, you know, that's kind of why I had to ask that question, because it does feel like the conclusion of Billy's journey, at least from the first film, right? And I know obviously things are complicated over there, and you know, I'm like, nobody knows what the future holds for these characters or this franchise as it exists right now.
The great thing though is that they've said that there's nothing in Shazam that contradicts what they're doing, so there's nothing stopping, you know, more Shazam movies from happening, really.
Do you have you given any thought to what a third Shazam movie would look like?
No, I didn't give any thought to a second one where I was doing the first one, because it's just like, you're just focusing on that movie, make it as good as possible. And then same thing here, just focus on this, make it as good as possible and have a proper ending, because you never know what happens, you know? So yeah, I mean, but there's certainly a lot more you could do with the characters and that world. And you know, there's so much more you could use from the old comics, other villains and things like that.
Do you think the Mr. Mind thing could ever be revisited, or do you think that like the Mind and Savannah team up, that its time has passed?
I mean, I'd love to see it, because I mean he's sort of one of the more unique comic book villains, because on the one hand he's kind of silly because he's a little worm, you know, with a voice box. But he's also very, very dangerous, because he's highly intelligent and he has certain powers and skills. And he has different forms in the comic books as well. Like he can do the hyper fly, which is way more dangerous. So I think he's unique enough that you could do something really cool with him.
Do you know what your next project is? Do you know what your next directing job is?
Not exactly. I have a few things that developed that's close to going, but we'll see sort of which one goes first, which one is ready first. But they're all...
Do you need a break from...
They're all horror.
I was just going to say, do you need a break from superheroes?
Yeah, because it's been two Shazam movies in a row now, so I just need to do something that doesn't take 3 years to do and like has so many like visual effects and stunts and stuff. Just a little... simple little horror movie, you know, scare people again.
Aside from if the opportunity arises to do a third Shazam movie, are there any other DC heroes that you like have your eye on that you think would be really fun to put your stamp on?
I don't know. I mean, Shazam is kind of perfect in many ways. And to be honest, I'm not familiar with all. I don't have really deep cuts, you know, when it comes to it, but no, I mean, I'd be open to a lot of things, but Shazam is one of the more suiting ones, I think.
Great. Well, David, I think that's our time. Thank you so much.
Great. Well, thank you.
That's it for DC Stand'em this week. Come back next week for an interview with Superman and Lois showrunners Todd Helbing and Brent Fletcher for a spoiler-filled breakdown of the first two episodes of season 3. Don't forget to check out our web home at denageek.com, where you can find all our DC coverage at denageek.com/DC. Drop us a line at DC Stand'em on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks again to our sponsor, Outright Games, and Justice League Cosmic Chaos. Head over to OutrightGames.com for more info on this fun new DC game. And hey, don't forget we have a Marvel show. You can also listen to Marvel Stand'em wherever you're listening to this show right now. Check it out. Sometimes we do these Stand'ems live, so make sure you're following DennyGeek on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/DennyGeekTV or at youtube.com/DennyGeekUS. This has been DC Stand'em on the DennyGeek Network. Until next time, folks, remember, we stand together. We'll